this person and shot it. After doing all this, he said, "This body is useful when it is alive. This body can do good deeds when it is alive. All our body organs can do good deeds when they are alive. However, when we die, the chances of being forgiven fades away."
برادر و خواهر، دنیا جای جبران هست.
Dear brothers and sisters, this world is a good place to repent for our wrong deeds and to compensate for its outcomes. However, on the Day of Judgment and on the Purgatory, we only come back for a single chance so that you will be forgiven. In this world, we don't need the repentance or regret of others for our deeds. We can directly ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to forgive us. Allah is the fastest accountant of deeds. The same God that is the most merciful is also the fiercest ones. There are no two gods. Thus, ask Allah for His forgiveness before it's getting too much late, and this comes to you. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulema's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Mandegari. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
In the limelight.
Researchers have discovered 15 particles of the contaminants per gram of vein tissue in the first study of its kind. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT noted in this regard, microplastics have been found for the first time in human vein tissue, a team of researchers from the University of Hull revealed last week. Five distinct types of microplastic were discovered in samples taken from the saphenous or leg veins of patients undergoing heart bypass surgery. "We were surprised to find them," Professor Jeanette Rochelle said in a press release accompanying the paper's publication in the journal PLOS-1. He said, we already know microplastics are in blood, but it was not clear whether they could cross blood vessels into vascular tissue, and this work would suggest they can do just that. The UK-based researchers found an average concentration of 15 particles of plastic per gram of vein tissue, similar to or higher than the levels found in lung and colon tissue, but observed that the shape and types of plastic found in vascular tissue was markedly different from other tissue types. Rochelle observed, these first human tissue analyses suggest that the distribution of microplastics, predominant types, may be tissue-specific. The most common types of plastic found in the samples include alkyd resin, which is found in synthetic paints and varnishes, polyvinylacetate, an adhesive used in food packaging and shipping, nylon, and EVOEVA, used for food packaging and watertight lamination. While Rochelle stressed that we don't yet know the implications of this on human health, she acknowledged that microplastics had been shown to cause inflammation and stress responses in lab settings. Co-author Professor Mahmoud Loubani added that the presence of the microplastics might contribute to the failure of coronary artery bypass surgery involving grafts from the saphenous veins, suggesting the contaminants may well play a role in damaging the inside of the vein, leading to it becoming blocked with the passage of time. Removing the microplastics was a possibility, he said in a press release. The team has previously discovered the ubiquitous pollutants in blood and lung tissue, as well as in surgical operating theaters. By some estimates, 15 tons of plastic waste enters Earth's oceans every minute, breaking down into smaller particles and entering the body through the food chain and through the air people breathe. Guardian had earlier reported microplastic pollution has been detected in human blood for the first time, with scientists finding the tiny particles in almost 80% of the people tested. The discovery shows the particles can travel around the body and may lodge in organs. The impact on health is as yet unknown, but researchers are concerned as microplastics cause damage to human cells in the lab, and air pollution particles are already known to enter the body and cause millions of early deaths a year. Huge amounts of plastic waste are dumped in the environment, and microplastics now contaminate the entire planet, from the summit of Mount Everest to the deepest oceans. People were already known to consume the tiny particles via food and water, as well as breathing them in, and they have been found in feces of babies and adults. The scientists analyzed blood samples from 22 anonymous donors, all healthy adults, and found plastic particles in 17. Half the samples contained PET plastic, which is commonly used in drink bottles, while a third contained polystyrene, used for packaging food and other products. A quarter of the blood samples contained polyethylene, from which plastic carrier bags are made. Our study is the first indication that we have polymer particles in our blood. It's a breakthrough result, said Professor Dick Vetok, an ecotoxicologist at Verenigde University in Amsterdam. He said, But we have to extend the research and increase the sample sizes, the number of polymers assessed, etc. It is certainly reasonable to be concerned, he told The Guardian, adding, the particles are there and are transported throughout the body. He said previous work had shown that microplastics were 10 times higher in the feces of babies compared with adults, and that babies fed with plastic bottles are swallowing millions of microplastic particles a day. He said, we also know in general that babies and young children are more vulnerable to chemical and particle exposure. That worries me a lot. The research was published in the journal Environment International and adapted existing techniques to detect and analyze particles very, very small. Some of the blood samples contained two or three types of plastic. The team used steel syringe needles and glass tubes to avoid contamination and tested for background levels of microplastics using blank samples. Vetok acknowledged that the amount and type of plastic varied considerably between the blood samples. But this is a pioneering study, he said, with more work now needed. He said the differences might reflect the short-term exposure before the blood samples were taken, such as drinking from a plastic-lined coffee cup or wearing a plastic face mask. Vetok said, the big question is, what is happening in our body? Are the particles retained in the body? Are they transported to certain organs, such as getting past the blood-brain barrier? And are these levels sufficiently high to trigger disease? We urgently need to fund further research so we can find out. The new research was funded by Dutch National Organization for Health Research and Development and Common Seas, a social enterprise working to reduce plastic pollution. A recent study found that microplastics can latch on to the outer membranes of red blood cells and may limit their ability to transport oxygen. The particles have also been found in the placenta of pregnant women, and in pregnant rats, they pass rapidly through the lungs into the hearts, brains, and other organs of the foetuses. A new review paper published recently, co-authored by Vetok, assessed cancer risk and included more detailed research on how micro and nanoplastics affect the structures and processes of the human body and whether and how they can transform cells and induce carcinogenesis is urgently needed, particularly in light of the exponential increase in plastic production. The problem is becoming more urgent with each day.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray five times a day when so many others have strayed, smiling he would say, I am a Muslim.
الإسلام ديني والعظم غير ديني محمد اللي هديني.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of God, welcome to the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program. And sitting in the studio along with me, Sheikh Javid, well, the dear guest speaker in this program, Islamic Laws. Welcome to the program, Sheikh Javid.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is ours. Stay tuned. We'll be back. We're going to talk about some of the Islamic rules or laws about purity according to Ayatollah Khamenei's fatwas. But before that, let's take a listen to a short biography. A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under Sayyid Hadi Milani. For 7 years straight, he was in Qom studying under Ayatollah Burujerdi, Imam Khomeini, the son of Ayatollah Ha'ari, who set up the Hawza in Qom, Sheikh Murtaza Ha'ari, which was one of the top figures in Qom. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years, he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran, when the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, "We testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid according to that testimony. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up till 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching. One can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that. Back to the program, Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Javad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker, is kind enough to answer my questions regarding some of the Islamic laws, especially the ones that we've started from a few episodes ago onward, regarding purification based on the fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Well, Sheikh Javid, in this episode, let me ask you this question. You know, sometimes it happens that, Muslims in the West, they have to rent houses. They cannot build their own houses. And wherever they go and rent an apartment, for example,
with a built-in toilet in it, right?
Sure.
And the toilet is unfortunately built in the way or in the direction of the Qibla. What can they do about this?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, if possible, they should, do some construction work to change the direction of the toilet seat, and because it will be something permanent. And in the event that they stay longer in that house, it will be easier for them and for the people coming after them to use the seat without having to worry about the direction of the Qibla. So that's one thing. And if it is a rented house which one cannot, change, and one cannot reconstruct, of course, in most cases it's not possible because the landlord does not allow such a reconstruction to take place. So one has to adjust himself or herself while using the toilet seat, the commode, and one should make sure that he does not or she does not use the seat. Use with his face towards the Qibla or with his back towards the Qibla. That has to be done. And of course, if there are guests, if there are other children, they have to be informed about the direction of the Qibla. That will be recommended.
I see.
Yes.
Okay. And another question, Sheikh Shavid, is about the human feces and urine, which we Muslims all know that they are impure, ritually speaking, right?
Yes.
But what about other impure things to be careful about? Would you tell our listeners about those impure things other than the feces and urine?
Obviously, as we discussed, urine and feces are ritually impure. But there are, apart from these two things, there are 8 other things which are impure and which are essentially impure. And they are semen, okay? Semen of animals and semen of men. Is impure, and one has to
of animals too.
Yeah, of course, semen is impure, and it doesn't make any difference whether the semen comes from a halal animal or a haram animal. It is impure.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when it comes to the dead body, is also impure if it is not washed. Okay, as long as the dead body has not been bathed or washed according to the Islamic Sharia, then it has to it should be treated as impure.
Mm-hmm.
And in the event that one touches the dead body, then it becomes necessary for an individual to undergo a process which is called ghusl, maslimayid, or ghusl for touching a dead body,
yes,
to purify oneself, to purify himself. And that's why, and that's the reason which quite clearly suggests that dead bodies are impure as long as they have not been washed. Then, of course, we have the blood. The blood of animals and human beings is impure. The blood which comes from animals, whatever animals, whether they are halal or haram, mm-hmm, is impure. And the same is the case with the blood of human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the blood which comes from an animal which does not have gushing blood, there are some small, tiny creatures which,
like insects,
like fish, for example, small,
uh-huh,
tiny fish.
Yes,
they have small amount of blood in their bodies. That blood is not impure because basically those animals,
there's no gushing.
Yeah, there's no the blood does not gush forth. It does not spurt.
Yes.
Out, and that's it.
Uh-huh.
Then we have dogs are,
essentially impure,
according to the explicit teachings of the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him. And also pigs, khinzir, are also essentially impure, of course. These two animals are impure. Other animals,
mm-hmm,
like, for example, we have swine, we have, jackals, wolves, they are not essentially impure, okay? They are, mm-hmm, not essential. Even though it's haram to pray with their fur on your body or on your clothes, okay? Because there's a hadith from the Infallibles which says that prayer with the fur of these animals or animals whose meat is essentially haram to eat,
mm-hmm,
okay, is not permissible.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then there is the ninth, an impure thing that's called wine or alcoholic objects, which are intoxicating, right, according to His Eminence. And according to all religious authorities, wine is impure. Wine is haram. It is one of the impure things. And alcoholic beverages, which are intoxicating, also are impure, and one has to stay away from them. And then the ninth, the last thing, of course, is the sweat of an animal which persistently eats a najasa, which eats, you know, impure things. Like, for example, it eats on the feces of human beings.
Right.
So, of course, there are special procedures which through which one can purify those animals. And these animals can be confined to certain places so that they can get purified.
Oh, thank you very much. We have to take a late break, and we'll be back after the break. Don't go away.
Sure.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/Ian. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, yeah, Allah. Guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah, oh Allah. Don't let me go astray, cause I need you.
Back to the program, Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio, with me, Mohammed Jadu Hosin, and our guest speaker, Sheikh Javid. Sheikh Javid, I asked you a question before the break about the impurity of human feces and urine. But what about the urine and feces of the animal that has been defiled by man? Are they najis?
Now, imagine, for example, a goat or a sheep, which is halal, okay? And which, if slaughtered according to Islamic Sharia, it is halal to eat its meat, okay?
Yes.
Now, God forbid if someone defiles these animals and has intercourse with them. Now, not only the urine becomes najis, the feces of these animals become najis, the entire animal becomes najis, and it's necessary to kill the animal, and it's not permissible to sell the animal to other other people who do not know about anything about the sexual intercourse that has taken place with that animal. So the feces, the fur of that animal, and everything that comes from that animal is impure.
How about the animal's urine and droppings? Are they impure?
And then, you know, the animals whose meat is halal to eat now, I give you the example of cows, you know, camels,
sheep,
and these are some of the animals which are halal to eat. Now, the droppings, the urine of these animals are pure. Not najis, they are pure, in case they are not defiled by human beings, you know.
Okay.
And when it comes to other animals, the animals whose meat is haram to eat, like, for example, the example of a lion or jackal or leopard, or these are some animals, yes. Of course, the urine and the feces or the droppings of these animals are najis, najis. And one has to be careful about them.
I see. How about the urine and feces of haram birds? Are they najis?
According to His Eminence, the urine and feces of the droppings of birds, like say crows, okay, like some like eagles, like you know, the falcons.
Yes,
these are animals whose urine and feces are not najis, but it is better to stay away from them, to keep away from these, from the urine and droppings of these birds, okay? Though it is haram to eat their meat because they are haram, okay?
Yes.
But it is better, not necessary, not obligatory to keep away, but it is better and recommended to keep away from their urine and from their droppings.
Thank you very much for your time, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, my dear listeners, for listening to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. From me and the rest of the crew, we say wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
رحمن رحيم منان كريم سلام عليم ملجا لا إله إلا هو غفار جميل وهاب لطيف تواب سميع بصير لا إله إلا هو وحيد قدير محيي مميت الظاهر والباطن لا إله إلا هو لا إله إلا هو.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Back to reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. This is Back to Reality. I am Asma. I have the pleasure to be your host. And here with me, I have two very dear guests, Sister Bita and Brother Muzaffar. Both of you, welcome to Back to Reality.
Assalamu alaikum. My pleasure to be here.
Of course, the pleasure is all in here. Brother Muzaffar, shall we start with you? Please introduce yourself briefly, very much, what you study and...
I'm Muzaffar Haider from the UK. I've studied English literature and now I'm in the Hawza, in the Islamic Seminary.
That's very good. It's a pleasure to have you in here and wish you luck with your studies. You, Sister Bita.
Yes, I'm at your service. I'm Bita and I study medicine at one of the University of Tehran in Iran.
So in today's Back to Reality, we are going to have something fun, I guess, because everybody is talking about it, about equality of genders, both of them, male and female. And I guess it would never happen, right? What do you think of it? Do you think there is an equality in both genders?
I want to see what Sister has to say first.
It depends. It depends from which perspective you are looking at this. You know, I mean, from the intellectual part and the spiritual part, if you look at the people, we are all human beings. You know, we have all faith towards God and so on. Some very special things in common as human beings. And you cannot divide people in these contents into two groups of male and female.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go through the topic of, I don't know, the social look towards the people, the appearance, the even the physical power, for doing something, even the intellectual power, we have differences in male and female groups.
So let me rephrase my question. I would put it this way. Are men and women equal to each other?
They're not.
Yeah, I'd agree. Yeah, they're not.
So why they would want the same equality?
A lot of the things that the West pushes for are just completely illogical and they're just there as distractions. Like the whole LGBT thing, like what do you mean a man and a man should get married? Like what, does that even make sense? Marriage is a holy thing. It's a religious ceremony, in fact. And the religion marries a man and a woman, not man and man.
Actually, they do it under the pretext of freedom, I guess.
And the pretext of freedom.
Yeah.
And so it's gone so out of hand that people are identifying as the opposite gender. But forget that. They're identifying as animals. But if somebody identifies as an animal, you have to accept it. If somebody identifies as anything, you have to accept it. It's really, really bizarre.
Yeah, it is.
You know, the thing is, they just want to go against the nature. Mm-hmm. And this is the problem, I think. You know,
in modern age, I guess it happened much more conspicuous than other eras.
You know, I think the most important factor here is the false understanding of the word freedom. Mm-hmm. We are interpreting everything as freedom. Yeah. Every, I don't know, little damn thing about we
no,
do.
No, a justification for all the flaws that happens, for all the errors in this world, is freedom.
Yeah, exactly. And this is the problem, I think.
I guess this story of equal rights of men and women is started with the rise of that school of thought.
Feminism? About,
yeah, feminism. Am I right?
Pretty much, yeah. Feminism. Yeah. If you trace it back, it does go back to that whole Western society, in fact. They're the ones who created the problem in the first place. The rest of the world was pretty much perfectly happy.
Yeah.
It was the Western world who enforced this whole... they weren't just oppressive towards black people in Africa or the natives in America or other countries in general like India. No, they were oppressive to their own. And they were very, very oppressive to their women. Their women, if you look at some of the... you're studying literature,
yeah.
Right? So if you look at the literature, Emma, who
yeah,
wrote Emma?
Yeah, Emma, Jane Austen.
Jane Austen.
Jane Austen.
Jane Austen, she was part of a revolution in her time. Now, yeah. If you read her books, right, they seem Pride and Prejudice and the like. They just seem like completely normal and really
outdated.
The story
outdated of marriage, and, but it's yeah. Not just that.
She's... talking about this whole movement of women having some sort of place and standing
exactly,
in society,
yeah.
About a woman
to have a word,
a personality. Mm-hmm. I'm a human. You know, it was a desperate cry almost. It was women who weren't allowed the vote, and therefore the suffragettes came into place
exactly,
and they started to
yeah.
Burn their underwear and stuff and say that, you know, we have the right to vote. Otherwise, you know, Islamically speaking, it was the men and the women together who were leading the society.
Mm-hmm.
It was always...
And then with that movement, the women started to come out of their houses and they started to work alongside with men.
Well, they
and then what happened yeah. In their countries is that then the families started to shatter.
Oh, absolutely.
And fall apart.
So the capitalist mindset, the overlords of the capitalist society, yeah. They've always been looking for cheap labor.
Mm-hmm.
Even when you see about the emancipation movement and the,
yeah.
the freedom of the slaves
black.
And the banning of the slave trade and stuff, they say that the North of America was fighting against the South of America. I was just talking to a brother from Nigeria,
yeah.
A black brother, and he was talking about it because he's studying the history of it. And he said, look... Abraham Lincoln and the North, they never wanted freedom for the sake of freedom of black people. Rather, they were looking for intense very cheap labor.
Exactly.
And so in order to... If you have a slave, and this is one of the criticisms that they have against Islam, where they say, well, you guys had the slave trade. You all had slave labor and stuff. Well, first of all, ours wasn't based on race. It was anybody in the society who could no longer financially look after themselves. The people in charge, those corrupt, taghuti politicians,
tyrants.
Government, those
yeah.
tyrants, they were rich families. You look at the Rothschilds, you look at the Bilderberg Group, you look at the royal family, they're all rich families. That's all they are. Very, very filthy mm-hmm. rich families. And they keep their wealth among their own family members.
And they talk of the freedom of women and also the black people.
And what did they do? They broke up the families in society.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
When you have a family, a man and a wife, right? The wife is supporting all of the household structure. The man is out working. Then you have kids, you have brothers, you have sisters. They're doing the same thing. You become a family unit. You become a powerhouse. You become a village. Then that village can become a city.
Yeah.
That you can actually have a power and a voice of your own.
And the woman, of course, has an empire in her house.
Absolutely. But they've destroyed that entire thing.
Yeah.
And now, what is it? It's all about individuality.
Mm-hmm.
It's divide
yeah,
and conquer, but
yeah.
on the human level. And what
first,
done
they destroyed the families, and now they want the individual, like the humanist idea when it happened in Renaissance.
Exactly. And
the focus on the self.
That's where the whole this humanist and whole individualistic
yeah.
Mindset started to flourish.
So just right there, let's go for a short break, for a change of mood, for a sip of water, but don't go very much far away. Dear listeners of Back to Reality, we're talking about gender equality. And Sister Bito was about to say something.
Yeah, exactly. All of the things you've talked about to hear is really right, and I do agree with all of them. But the thing is that we're looking at these matter from the perspective of the superpower and so on from in the world. Mm-hmm. And we're not looking at them from the, I don't know, the insight of a woman in a village. We're not looking at from this perspective. We are telling that, okay, there is feminism, there is so on, and that's it, this, and so on. But the problem is that the women society need this. This is the problem.
Need what?
Need equality. You know, I mean, there
equality
there is
with men?
No, I'm not talking about that. The thing I'm going to tell you is that the desire of being equal exists in women's society. You cannot deny that. Equal in human rights.
Yeah, I do believe in humanity. Yes, we must have the same rights. But in, as in, a man being equal, a woman being equal to a man, it is not possible.
You know, the thing
based on their nature
is that it cannot turn the blame to the governments and I don't know, so on in superpower. The thing is that we have problems even in our society,
mm-hmm.
even in women's society. The physical appearance of women and men are different. And
yeah.
We all agree in that. But these differences doesn't make the intellectual power of them different.
That okay? is true, yes.
So there is a group of people from these feminist group of people who just want to tell that, okay, there is a difference here too. But it's not. The difference is because of the limited world of women. Why don't we have some, female scientists in the world? Why the number of them is so limited? Because the mindset of the world was like that. You are a woman, so the intellectual power of you is weaker.
Maybe at the start, you actually mean that the feminist movement raised because they wanted the number of important women to increase.
When we're talking about women in Islam, it always becomes a separate subject. That's why I don't like talking about hijab. I don't like talking about women's rights. It's such a cliche, right?
Yeah.
What do you mean? When we're talking about any Islamic topic, it's relevant to both men and women, unless we're going very specifically into some sort of family roles or etc. But otherwise, Islam generally is relevant mm-hmm. for both genders.
But when Islam came, it actually it was the religion that was for women. It respected women. At those times, they used to kill the girls, the little baby girls.
But then
our Prophet was so kind toward the women. Mm. And he used to call them the source of all the blessings.
You know, I think the source of all these problems about women mm-hmm. is that we are humiliating the value of the parenting, of the householding, and so on.
Exactly.
And this is the problem.
Now this is the point,
Yeah, exactly. Because we think only the outsider jobs are qualified to call the job.
Yeah, and a housewife who's just staying at home and taking care of her family is not doing much of a job.
Exactly.
And if she talks in society,
jobless.
She feels as if just a person who is not knowledgeable, necessarily not knowledgeable, and necessarily she doesn't know about anything that is related to her society and whatever.
And I think we have to change this mindset.
Yeah.
At first, from the root.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
The Holy Quran says, وَلَيْسَ الذَّكَرُ كَالْأُنْثَى. The male is not like the female. This is the biggest problem that we face in today's world.
Now, this is the gist of it
this
all.
This is it, right?
Yeah.
The male is not like the female, guys. They are two different things.
Not
they have
that.
Different
we are
different.
Not that mm-hmm. he is more valuable than this woman. Mm-hmm. No. Just the fact that they are different in their nature.
There's some people who think they're being clever because they say, I'm colorblind, right? I see a black person, but I see him the same as me.
Mm-hmm.
Or I see a brown person. I see That's so dumb. Listen, this person is different. They are black.
Yeah,
this person is different. They are white. Mm-hmm. This person is different. They are female, male, and so on and so forth.
But we are still all human beings with the same respect.
Allah says in the Quran, we created you in genders,
exactly.
in nations, in tribes,
to know yourself,
that you may know each other.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. So it's all about understanding.
And that's the beauty of life that we're missing out on. How do they think? What's their culture? What's their tongue? What's their, what are the, I mean, come on. Like when you,
the details,
when I started learning about women, like stuff like when I got married and stuff, Allah must be giving them so much of a daraja, which is higher than mine.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have that level of respect until you learn about the opposite gender.
That's the point.
And then the same for men. When you sisters, inshallah, when you learn about, inshallah, your future husbands, you're going to be like, whoa, I didn't realize that men think in this way. You know, that they need this ego thing that men have, that, you know, that needs to be maintained. He needs to feel like a king in his household, etc. I don't know, whatever it is.
A lot
when
of
you
details,
learn through
yes.
those things, it's a beautiful experience. And that's actually getting us closer to Allah. Why? Because He wants us to learn.
So we shouldn't be fooled by the slogans, actually. Respect is there. Humanity is there. In these parts, all the human beings, be it woman, be it a man, they're all the same. But in some very much clear things that shows the difference, we cannot just ignore it. So that was all the time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. Until another session, I bid you farewell. May Allah protect you with His blessing and with His never-sleeping eyes. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
يا الله يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي لدي أمة رائزك
يا الله
يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي Let the Ummah rise again. Let us see daylight again, once again.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
One of Joe Biden's promises during his presidential campaign was to immediately move to end all support for the Saudi-led coalition's war in Yemen. In February 2021, Biden stood at a podium at the State Department and proclaimed that the war in Yemen must end. Biden underlined the humanitarian crisis as the key reason the United States withdrew support.
This war has to end. And to underscore our commitment, we are ending all American support for offensive operations in the war in Yemen, including relevant arms sales.
An investigation by the Government Accountability Office found that the United States is training the Saudi-led coalition and the U.S.'s troops on the ground in Yemen. Biden confirmed that the United States has troops in Yemen in a letter to Congress in June last year. Simply put, he lied to the world when he claimed that the United States was withdrawing U.S. troops for the war in Yemen in 2021. On the contrary, the United States is making billions of dollars from the war in Yemen, as 200,000 have been killed from direct violence. According to data acquired from the Defense Security Cooperation Agency, between 2015 and 2021, the United States sent $54.2 billion in weapons and services to Saudi Arabia and the UAE. In addition, the Department of Defense provided $644 million for military training to Saudi Arabia and the UAE, almost entirely primarily through the Foreign Military Sales Program. The DoD uses acquisition and cross-servicing agreements to bill nations for logistical support and items ranging from flying hours, fuel, and bombs. Saudi Arabia paid the United States $157 million in flying hours, and the UAE paid $104 million for flying hours since the Saudi-led intervention began in Yemen in 2015. The United States billed Saudi Arabia and the UAE for $319 million in acquisition and cross-servicing agreements for logistical support. Also, the United States sent $18.6 billion in missiles, $6.2 billion in aircraft, $3.3 billion in ships, and $2.8 billion in military training to attack one of the poorest nations in the world. The United States is well aware that the coalition is not fighting an advanced military in Yemen. Billions of dollars have been spent destroying the country, killing hundreds of thousands of people. The UN Security Council approved a resolution to blockade Yemen since 2015 to prevent arms from flooding the conflict. However, the embargo has only succeeded in starving the Yemenis into famine. On a February 9th phone call in 2022 with the King of Saudi Arabia, Salman bin Abdulaziz Al Saud, Biden assured him that the United States would continue to support the war in Yemen. The phone call came 1 year after Biden lied to the world and announced that the U.S. was withdrawing its support of the war in Yemen. The Defense Security Cooperation Agency's Defense Institute of International Legal Studies conducted training at the Saudi War College that focused on the law of armed conflict, including laws related to air-to-ground targeting in May 2017, April 2018, June 2019, and May 2020. The DoD claims they are not responsible for civilian deaths because they provided the Saudis with training to avoid civilian casualties. According to the Yemen Data Project, over 23,000 Saudi-led coalition airstrikes since March 2015 have led to thousands of civilian casualties. A Yemeni human rights organization has warned that the Saudi-led war on Yemen, as well as the crippling siege in the impoverished Arab country, could result in the death of thousands of children suffering from cancer. Intisaf, Organization for Women's and Children's Rights, said in a statement on the occasion of World Cancer Day that more than 3,000 Yemeni children who have developed cancer as a result of Saudi aggression and the tight sea, land, and air blockade on the country are now at significant risk of death. The rights group criticized the international organizations and other relevant bodies for neglecting Yemeni cancer patients over the past years. Intisaf added that the incidence of leukemia is increasing among Yemeni children, saying the cases of kids suffering from blood cancer have soared from 300 to 700 in the capital Sana'a due to the use of internationally banned weapons supplied by the United States and the United Kingdom and used by Saudi-led coalition in Yemen. Approximately 1,000 children are also believed to have contracted leukemia in other Yemeni regions due to the same reasons. The rights organization pointed to the dire shortage of medicine needed for the treatment of patients diagnosed with cancer because of the Saudi-led military onslaught and siege, stating that many children lose their lives as a result. The human rights organization noted that the economic hardships caused by the ongoing military aggression and blockade have prevented minor cancer patients from seeking treatment abroad, calling for the opening of Sana'a International Airport for humanitarian purposes. It finally held Saudi Arabia and its allies fully responsible for all crimes and violations being perpetrated against the Yemeni nation, especially children, urging the international community to bear the legal and humanitarian responsibility for the violations against the civilians. Saudi Arabia, in collaboration with its Arab allies and with arms and logistics support from the US and other Western states, launched a devastating war in Yemen in March 2015. The objective was to crush the popular Ansarullah resistance movement, which has been running state affairs in the absence of a functional government in Yemen, and reinstall the Riyadh-friendly regime of Abd Rabu Mansur Hadi. The Saudi-led coalition has failed to achieve any of its objectives, leaving hundreds of thousands of Yemenis dead and spawning the world's worst humanitarian crisis.
The Iranian foreign minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian is on the final leg of his trip to Latin America, where he has met with a number of high-ranking officials in an effort to boost bilateral and multilateral relations. Cuba was the latest destination of Amir Abdollahian, where he met with Cuban President Miguel Díaz-Canel. During the meeting, they discussed matters of mutual interest at bilateral and international levels. The top Iranian diplomat voiced his country's categorical support for Havana while condemning sanctions on Cuba and foreign intervention in its internal affairs. Díaz-Canel, for his part, said despite all the existing pressures, Cuba is determined to cooperate with friendly countries and work with them to eliminate obstacles and challenges lying ahead. The Cuban president criticized U.S. unilateralism and said that his country has earned political independence at a high price and would preserve it. Amir Abdollahian also met with his Cuban counterpart, Bruno Rodriguez Parrilla. Both diplomats wrapped the U.S. sanctions policy against others, including Iran and several South American countries, saying such a policy is doomed to fail. Before Cuba, the top Iranian diplomat paid a visit to Venezuela, which is maintaining strong bilateral relations with Tehran. During a meeting between Amir Abdollahian and Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro, the two sides discussed ways to strengthen cooperation further in various fields, including energy. They also called for heightened vigilance in the face of U.S.-led pressure and bullying. Maduro also pointed to common challenges being faced by Venezuela and Iran. Amir Abdollahian also traveled to Nicaragua as part of his Latin American trip. In a meeting with President Daniel Ortega, he condemned unlawful sanctions imposed by the U.S. and certain Western countries on Iranian individuals and entities. He stressed, however, that the Islamic Republic has managed to move forward despite the coercive measures designed to stop the country's progress. Amir Abdollahian voiced Tehran's eagerness for closer cooperation in various fields, saying Iran sets no limits to the promotion of cooperation with Nicaragua. Ortega, for his part, highlighted shared concerns of Tehran and Managua. He said that the two countries have a common enemy, adding that what Iran fought and defeated in 1979 was the same Nicaraguans rose up against in the same year. Amir Abdollahian's visit to Latin America puts under the spotlight the significance of his meeting with officials there. One of the most important points highlighted by almost all leaders was that the ongoing developments in Latin America and elsewhere in the world are creating new opportunities for multilateralism. That was particularly underlined by the top Iranian diplomat, who dismissed unilateralism as an obsolete doctrine on the global stage. He stressed that unilateralism cannot respond to developments and changes taking place worldwide. In the case of Iran and Venezuela, the officials of the two OPEC members found a common ground to solidify their relations to deal with a common enemy, the United States, which has come up with crippling sanctions against them for years. Standing against the U.S. and Western imperialism was another topic of discussion during the Iranian official's visit. That was underscored in Daniel Ortega's comments, where he said the enemies of global peace and tranquility have maintained their imperialistic policies and considered the whole world, not just Latin America, as their backyard. Ortega, however, expressed hope that imperialism cannot last any longer. On sanctions, Latin American leaders echoed the stance of the Iranian foreign minister, who called such measures a terrorist threat being used by imperial powers as leverage. They stressed the need for boosting cooperation in trade and technology, among other things, to overcome those curbs. It seems that shared challenges have brought these countries together to push against U.S. hegemony. And what could make a difference? Moving away from the U.S. dollar, establishing a common currency, enhancing bilateral and multilateral trade. It seems that an oriental shift is largely taking place in today's world. That is visible in countries on the African continent that are trying to enhance ties with the East, namely Russia and China, and Latin American nations that are standing firm against U.S. unilateralism. All these point to their rejection of Western hegemony. The balloon's journey across the ocean has gripped the world's attention. On Friday, the U.S. military said it mobilized fighter jets, but advised President Joe Biden against shooting the balloon out of the sky for fear debris could pose a safety threat. U.S. authorities said the military took custody of the balloon when it entered America's airspace. On Saturday, however, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said the balloon, which was being used by China in an attempt to surveil strategic sites in the continental United States, was brought down above U.S. territorial waters. Pentagon also snapped what it called China's unacceptable violation. China has expressed regret, blaming winds for pushing what it called civilian airship into U.S. airspace. Beijing said the balloon was used for meteorological purposes and had unintentionally escaped into U.S. airspace.